Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Loadseekers, episode 1211 for Friday, the 18th of July, 2025. I'm your host, Luca Johnson, joined today by special guests, Josh Firm and Nick Dixon.
Full
and
names
together
today.
We are Firm Dixon Johnson.
Nice. Straight out with the jokes. And Josh is back. I came back thinking he'd left and he's still here.
You can't get rid of me.
Yeah,
I'm like some sort of venereal disease. I just keep on coming back.
You did a really good podcast though recently, Josh. I saw 120,000 views. Yeah, it doesn't matter what channel.
Mm-hmm. Whose channel was it there?
No, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I would never bring that.
Do you have a channel, Nick? Do you have a channel?
I think we both do. Yeah,
both of our channels. Go and subscribe to them, ladies and gentlemen.
And we also, you know, I appeared on Nick's channel, so it's even more confusing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and some of people might not know me, but I put up a tweet today with me with the sword in the old office, just to show that I'm from the OG days. So to anyone who doesn't know me, I'm Nick. Hello, and to anyone who does, I'm also Nick. So redundant, really.
You're Nick, whether they know you
That's
or not.
True. I'm just, and if you don't know me, I'm just a classic centrist who just believes in all the normal stuff. You know, women shouldn't vote, death penalty for shoplifting, that type of thing.
I like
sensible
that
policies for a healthier Britain.
Yeah, and for making noise on a train with no headphones.
Oh, yeah. Shootable.
Got Ouch. To go.
Also, total junkie deaf as well. Just throw that one in there because I've been walking through Swindon today and my goodness, are they annoying.
Anyway, today we're going to be talking all about the Battle of Epping. We're then going to be talking about Britain now allowing children to vote. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about the man who pretended to be a black poet, which should be a fantastic way to round things off for the weekend, ladies and gentlemen. So, with all that said, shall we begin by talking about what happened in Epping yesterday? Well, I say yesterday, but it actually goes back further than that, of course. As you can see here, reported by the BBC... Can't help but be reminded of the last segment we were on together, Josh.
Man.
From your deep research of the subject, Josh, what could you maybe tell us about this man?
He is not just any man. He is a foreign man.
He is a foreign man. And his name is Hadush Kebatu.
I never would have guessed.
Yes.
Oh, wait, I would have.
He must be from, Wales, is it? Or somewhere... It's a classic northern name.
He's an Ethiopian.
So. He is Ethiopian.
By the way... This man has caused an awful lot of problems, right? Man and men. And because Jess Phillips is absolutely right. She was saying today, you know who the problem is? It's men. And I look at his headline, she's absolutely right. It's man.
Well, she can only go off of what trusted sources like the BBC tell her, can she?
Yeah.
It's like Florida man, isn't it?
Yes.
How can he keep on getting away with it? That's the question.
So, but obviously, like with so many things here, these men... just men, always have it as a dark turn whenever you see that in a news article. And in the case of this one, it's particularly ridiculous because it's alleged that he sexually assaulted a 14-year-old girl living in Epping, which for those of you who are maybe outside of Britain and don't know your geography, it's actually in the county of Essex, but it's also, you can get there via the last... tube point
from the last train out of London.
Last train out of London. You can get there via Loughton. So it's connected to London, and it's another example of how London just keeps swallowing up these places that used to be outside of it. But nonetheless, this man, 8 days after the 41-year-old arrived in the UK via a boat.
Incredible. And I'm certainly not making light of this repulsive incident, but it said a man tried to kiss a schoolgirl as she ate pizza. Who tries to kiss someone while they're eating pizza? Do you know what I mean?
Ethiopians. He wanted a mouthful as well.
Yes.
Obviously, they're all very skinny.
Talk about not understanding the culture. It's like I'm trying to eat a pizza. It's horrific.
Yeah, I understand why people are very angry about this, it now being serious. And it is horrible.
It's repulsive.
A schoolgirl shouldn't have to put up with a 41-year-old man.
No, it's absolutely repulsive. And so there was a... There's an ongoing court investigation into whether or not he's guilty. So I may have to be careful what I say. But there was also an initial court occasion on Thursday. And it says that days after the alleged offence last Monday and Tuesday, Serena Berry, for the prosecution, told the 45-minute hearing that one of the alleged victims had been approached on a busy high street. And she said that Kebatu had no ties to anyone or any place in the UK, adding that immigration have confirmed that he was only in the UK since June 29th. So here, very, very recently, and already sexual assault. basically. And then Raphael Pidgett for the defense said, "I believe he is here as a refugee or asylum seeker, and that he arrived informally on a boat."
Informally?
Informally.
So he wasn't dressed in a full suit?
No.
Also, last time I checked, Ethiopia, not at war. I know they did have some trouble with the Tigray region, but I think that's all simmered down now. So there's no reason, really, for him to be an asylum seeker in the first place.
No, indeed. There's constant, obviously, this particular scandal, and he's been housed in the Bell Hotel, which is one of those hotels' wonderful legacy of the Tories, when they decided to put all of these illegals into hotels in small towns and villages.
I mean, it would be a lot better if it were Lib Dem and Labour voters and only those areas. Just like, you've got to live with the consequences. But of course, it shouldn't happen at all.
No, shouldn't happen at all. And so this has been pretty well documented. And so, of course, you have... I'll just play this on mute because I don't know what sort of language is going to be said. But you just heard there, just protect our kids, right? Mm-hmm. Perfectly pure, uncontroversial message that everyone in the country should be able to get behind.
Mm-hmm. Except for the people opposite, apparently.
Except for the people opposite with identical placards.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
And the police line protecting them.
People are chanting, protect our kids, and then they've got stand up to racism things. It's like, protect our kids. Well, that's racist.
Yeah.
It sort of reveals they understand.
I look forward to the headlines. Remember the last time this happened when every newspaper was like, oh, brave counter-protest. And they all had the same placards and they all ran with the same story. It was completely fake, made-up protest. And you had like Nick Lowe saying, oh, this was great. Then he later admitting that it was a hoax, but it was good anyway.
Yes.
The papers just ran with it. It was one of those COVID moments, one of those kind of like mask off. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not really the news, are you? You know, it was just like every front page.
It was a Wednesday in the Southport riots, wasn't it? I remember it very vividly because all of Swindon High Street closed down because they'd received reports that there was going to be a far-right demonstration walking down Manchester Road, which is a very Islamic and very crime-ridden area. Mm. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen because there's a mosque there. And as we know from the Southport riots, the mosques usually contain weapons. Mm. And it was obviously just a hoax. Everywhere closed. And it just gave the counter-protesters an opportunity to seem like they were the ascendant group. And it's obvious that the protests against immigration were all astroturfed on that specific day to facilitate them. Because, let's be honest, if they met on an even playing field, the stand-up-to-racism people would not stand a chance.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. No, not
they
at all.
They need the police protection, otherwise they are done for.
They do. But the story of what's currently happening in Epping is the story of what happens basically every week now in the country, where these tensions continue to grow more and more. And you have here the Epping Forest Council leader who was saying that we never wanted that migrant hotel. The community didn't want it, the council didn't want it, but the government, you know, this would have been the Tories back when they were in charge, basically told us, you're going to make that into a migrant hotel. And obviously you're going to have that danger on your doorstep. And, you know, for my part, this sounds pretty much identical a story to when I actually did a little bit of genuine on-the-ground investigations of my own a year back when I went to RAF Scampton. And that's exactly the story that I had from the locals there too. Didn't matter. There was no consent in it. You were simply told that you are going to have 2,000 illegal migrants just plonked next to you with nothing more than a metal fence next to your village of 600.
You mean a central government is going against the wills of not only the local people, but the local government as well? Mm. Well, I never. That never happens all across the world every day.
And you can see a helpful map here of where the Forest Hotel is and where the school is, just up here.
Just around the corner, isn't it?
Just around the corner. Just around the corner.
It reminds me of, they're trying to build a mosque in Cumbria, my home. It's not that near to the lakes where I'm from, but it's still in Cumbria, and everyone keeps helpfully tagging me in it, and I, of course, get really annoyed every time. But to be fair, the local suppliers and stuff are all refusing to get involved with it. Mm. And someone also, and obviously I'm not condoning this, but someone smashed the camera there as well in a car with no license plates. But this is what will happen. Because this Epping thing, the government's position is illegal migrants should come over and they should be allowed to just rape your children. Mm. And then they'll get special treatment in the two-tier justice system. We have no borders and we have... That's not a society, is it? That's not a country. So, of course, people are going to rebel. I'm amazed that it's only been relatively mild and it's only just starting, but it's going to get worse, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, we were saying, weren't we, that, you know, between what happened in Ireland recently, between what you're saying in little towns in Spain, it's just becoming more and more regular, this sort of thing, all across Europe.
When people have nothing to lose, they've got nothing to, you know, there's got no risk to going out and protesting on the street or even rioting.
How could it not happen? It really seems like they're doing everything they can. And obviously, Professor David Betzer says things like this. It seems like they're doing everything they can to provoke civil unrest. I'm not saying it is deliberate. It's just they're doing all the things you would do if it was deliberate. Mm. You almost wonder if it's like telling yourself, like, oh, don't trip up or something, and then you trip up. It's like there's the one thing they're so afraid of, which is a sort of a majority of the native majority in a country sort of rising up and organizing. That's the one thing they're doing everything they can to provoke, ostensibly, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's so strange.
Also, it's not actually related to this message I got up from him, but Morgoth made a really good point earlier on this week, I believe it was, which was that if the British state was entirely incompetent, every now and then that incompetence would actually benefit us.
Right. By chance.
By chance, at some point, it would actually benefit us. But it never does. It never does. It always has the worst possible outcome.
Yeah.
And so what can you do but ascribe malicious intent?
Dominic Cummings did a speech on it recently, which I did a reaction to. It's exactly what he says. It's the pathological system working as intended. Mm-hmm. It's not just that it does bad things. It also stops anything good. He was saying there's a few skilled migrants, immigrants, proper skilled people we might actually want to take. Mm. But he says the Home Office is waging a jihad against them. That's the word he used. So they also stop everything good. There was just a story the other day about a British highly qualified medical student can't get a job as a doctor despite the massive shortage.
Actually covered that at Lotus Eaters.
Oh, brilliant.
And they're bringing in people from countries where you can't take the qualifications at face value.
Right.
And actually, British doctors are some of the best qualified in the world. I think the only ones that outperformed them off the top of my head were South African, presumably white South African, and Australian maybe, and US. But they're all in the same sort of ballpark, but you can see a commonality there of developed countries with good infrastructure and the ability to train good doctors.
Yeah. So I take Morgoth's point. It's like,
yes,
it only does bad things, nothing good. Very strange. Yeah, like you say, you'd think it'd be like, oh, but we've got some good doctors. No, they're stopping the doctors. Mm-hmm. Oh.
They're making them worse, yeah.
Right. So nothing works. Everything is opposite world.
Yes, it is. And, you know, some people with an experience of opposite world are, of course, the people in Epping themselves. And as Morgoth points out here in a text from a friend, that Epping is one of them places the East End Cockneys fled to. And they know that there's nowhere else to go. Because, of course, it's not merely the question of London and the demographics of London is not entirely based around just the foreigners who've moved in there. It's also the indigenous white English people who have fled it as well, right, because of the state of it.
When you go, it's like you said, Epping's the end of the line. So when you go to the end of the line, it's like, right, we can't back up any further. So now we have to fight back.
Yeah, which is why I thought it was relevant to bring up.
Yeah.
And you get this, and obviously Essex as a county as well, you get with Farage's seat in Clacton. Clacton, famously another town that's got a lot of the people who've flown from London.
Cockney diaspora, or what?
Yeah.
Lotus Eater's own Beau Dade, of course, an Essex man.
He is Essex man. So I actually thought that this was worth playing. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think it should be listened to all the way through.
And I'm not going to sing. Good for you. But listen, I just want to thank everyone for coming here today. We're all local people. We're all good, local, tax-paying people. We don't want trouble. We don't want fights. My question would be, why, and all due respect to the police, why are you allowing agitators to come and fight against us? Yeah. Because you are inciting violence. We're not. You are. Mr. Starmer, I hope you're going to hear, I hope you hear this. Why are you letting 500-600 undocumented men come across the channel every day? Into this country. We don't know who they are. We don't know what their background is, but they don't share our values. They don't respect women and they do not respect children.
Yes!
Yes!
I am a mother of three. I have got knee is under 10. Every child's right is to walk to school and not fear that they're going to be sexually assaulted or raped. We do not live in a third world country. This is the United Kingdom the last time I looked. This is not about racism. I don't care if the men in that hotel over there are green, yellow or pink. We don't know who they are. They may be nice men. I don't know. No one knows. The likelihood is they're probably not. But a man gets off a boat from Ethiopia. He has come across Europe to come to this country. Why? Because we are a soft touch.
Yeah.
We give them everything that they want and then they turn around and abuse us.
I'll leave it there. But she speaks very well.
She does, yeah.
She speaks very, very well, and I wanted to give her the opportunity to obviously speak on this as well, so to amplify a message. But she also, interestingly, towards the end of this speech, goes on to say that don't care anymore what you call us.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care about being called far right. Don't care about being called racist.
It makes me laugh these days, to be honest. If someone calls me racist, I'm like, you don't even know.
Yeah, but I thought what was notable there is, for you, for people who follow this stuff for a living, people on our side and stuff, we're well used to knowing that when someone says that now, it's just a disingenuous way to, it's just a way to attack you and you should dismiss it completely. But for an ordinary woman who's mm-hmm. not in this business,
yeah.
who's, as a woman, high in agreeableness, to quote Jordan Peterson,
right.
more women traditionally care more about social conventional, you know, social approval. Mm-hmm. So to say at this point, I don't care about being called far, she says, if that's what I have to take, if I have to take that label, I will bear it.
Yes.
That's a significant moment.
Yes. You would rather be a racist that prevents rape than...
Yeah, because they're protecting their children and they're like, fine, I'm far right, I'm protecting my child.
I'm amazed at how fatigued people are about hearing about this sort of thing, as in being called racist. And you're just like, yeah, I don't care anymore. No one cares. It's so overdone that the word doesn't have any meaning. And there are lots of people that are just embracing it now and just saying, sure, okay. Yep. You know, if that's the price of protecting children from sexual assault, then so be it.
Yeah, when can I have a border again? Yeah, exactly. Boats showing up every day with rapists, mm-hmm. ready-made rapists coming off the boat and assaulting children. You're like, okay, I'm racist then.
But also, it's not just the illegals as well, is
no,
it? It's the much larger problem of the legal migrants, many of which are coming from the same places that the illegals are coming from. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly the same problem, but even more pernicious, really.
I agree. But there's another point to these posts here about actually just look at the fact that they're clearly homemade, mm-hmm. right? Against what the totally non-astroturfed counter protest are coming with, you can tell that the community have actually made these themselves.
Yeah, those astroturfed counter protest people—they're like the people who show up with the full kit first day at football. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're the full kit people. They can't even play, but they've got all the stuff. They've got the best tennis racket, whatever it is.
All the gear and no idea.
Exactly. These are the real people with the homemade signs.
They are. But because of the tensions, of course, and the ever-increasing feeling of how the police are not on the side of ordinary people, and of course, I shouldn't need to say this, but I obviously preface, I don't endorse violence, I don't endorse rioting, we here don't endorse that, but what we are saying is we understand why things have got to this point, why the anger has built so much that eventually you see things like this.
I've got sympathy for people being angry.
So things did get quite aggressive, actually, out there. There was a lot that I saw. But this is probably the most, infamous part going round.
What the fuck? Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, no!
I have no idea if that person's okay. But that was really, really awful. Mm-hmm. And when you compare the way that the police are just using their vans as battering rams against the barricades, when you compare the way that they were accelerating into that man, compare that to how they handled something like the Harehills riots in Leeds last year.
Yeah, they just fled, didn't they?
They just fled and let that diverse community just incinerate the place to the ground, light the police cars on fire.
And you can also compare it to those people that glue themselves to the road and they're treated like... until very recently, they were treated like kings. Remember, there's Just Stop Oil, then there's the other one, the Insulation Nutters, can't remember their name now.
Insulate Britain.
Yeah, and they would glue themselves to the road and they'd be like, oh, do you want a cup of tea? It's like, you didn't just get slammed. It's just like, we've seen a car slam someone before and I recall it was quite controversial.
One thing that's worth mentioning here... Okay, you've pulled that up. That's funny. It's worth mentioning that I don't actually think the person who hit that man did it deliberately. Because if you notice, the van that follows up sees what happens and slows down a little bit. And I think usually the police are told not to hit people. So she might even get in trouble for that with the police. But I'm not being some sort of quizzling here. I'm just adding a little bit of nuance.
Yeah. Well, I saw someone on Twitter saying, oh, the right-wing people will say, oh, the guy shouldn't have stamped on the police should stamp on their face with the Manchester Airport incident, but not this. Of course, they're not exactly similar, are they? One of them, the guy had broken a woman's nose. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? This is people protesting against...
I saw the video of her after. She was in deep trauma.
That's horrific.
Yeah, it was really awful.
This is very angry people who've been pushed too far protesting against kids being assaulted. Very, very different. But people are like, oh, which is it, far right? It's like, well, no, we want the police to do their job properly. But it's a hard job, of course. But those incidents aren't really equivalent, are they?
Well, I'd rather those Pakistanis weren't letting the country in the first place. So it would never have happened if I had my way. You know, these people are at least English.
Yes. I won't play more footage. You get the idea. But this image came out and instantly became iconic. There's a lot of symbolism in this image, I would say. The England flag, the police van. Very David and Goliath, isn't it, in a way?
Epping Square. It's like Tiananmen Square, isn't it? Staring down the tank.
On a very British roundabout.
That's true. A little mini roundabout there that the police are driving straight over by the looks of it.
Yes.
Not allowed to do that. That's a traffic violation. This image,
can't park there, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Call this image when the English began to hate, couldn't you? It's like, what is that line with long arrears? Do you remember that line from Kipling?
Oh, the Kipling.
Of course,
line.
Yeah.
I'll find it. It's with long arrears to make good. That's how it feels. It's been a long time coming, but it was inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
It was. And so with all of this, of course, you have the problem that is a bit like I reiterated with the question in Spain as well. We see it here as well, because the British actually have quite a long memory, right? We remember Southport, we remember Leeds, people remember...
It's only last year.
you know, but like...
I know what you're saying.
You know what we mean? It's like all these little things... Mm-hmm. Just add towards a bigger picture in the minds
of noticing and remembering.
A lot of noticing of the way that authority acts with the Palestine protests or with BLM or with any of. I know that Lord Hermer assured us that there was no two-tier policing in the United Kingdom.
Oh, that's a relief.
Yes. Yeah. I just happen to think he's a bit of a liar.
I didn't see an awful lot of kneeling here.
No, I didn't. No.
There is also one other point. I've realised that I've skipped it because I was looking for where it was, which is that... Where is it? Sorry. I thought I had the link, but it seems not to be there. Is the fact that, of course, the anti-protesters, or the counter-protesters, I should say, were being escorted down by the police... And you can see that as soon as tensions are already very, very high. And because a child has probably been sexually assaulted by a man who shouldn't be in the country. Mm-hmm. The moment that you start putting counter-protesters in the faces of all these mums and dads who are very, very concerned about the safety of their children in the neighbourhood, and these people who have the temerity to stand there. And
probably
just go,
not from the community either, probably bust in.
Well, that's the point. Because they were bussed in by the police and they were also bussed out, which is a video that, sorry, I was trying to get for you. But it speaks to, as you say, Josh, the fact that these people are not local.
They're not from round here.
They're not even from round here. Mm. And so you have this thing, and as we were saying as well, we know how many, as you said, with the Southport riots, and then when those left-wing protests just spouted up all over the country.
Stuff that you do.
Sorry? Anyway.
Noise coming out of the TV.
Yeah, noise from the TV.
Didn't you maybe find in that clip you were talking about?
Yes. So you have this constant thing where you can tell that these people are genuinely just there to agitate, right? Mm-hmm. Possibly at the behest of the government or an NGO or any of, you know.
And they've got identical signs to one another. They're all the same sorts of full-time protesters, no lifers.
No.
Those sorts of people.
It's very, very suspicious. And I can see even just ordinary people now starting to put those two things together.
Yeah.
They know that this is totally inorganic. Mm-hmm. And comes about every... Oh, he's got... Thank you very much, Harry. I'll just play that.
Local resident support. So you can hear me. This is who local resident support...
I'll just take it to here. So you can see them all being very, very civilly just sort of ushered on by the police, and they all get into the vans. And they're taken away at the end of the day after a hard day's work agitating.
The police shouldn't be taking sides in a protest like this. This is a great way to delegitimize themselves, and, you know, for better or worse.
Mm. Yeah, because, again, it shows that the impartiality of the police is not impartial.
Well, there's no such thing as impartiality in any life.
It's impartiality is always partial, mm-hmm. But it's sometimes a little more subtle.
Yes,
than
at
others. And the police don't understand subtlety at all. And so you had a statement from the police with respect to what happened yesterday, where they just said that, "I'm sure those living in Epping have concerns following tonight. I share those concerns. We know the people who carried out these crimes do not represent Epping or Essex. Nothing about the offending we saw tonight is representative of these communities or the peaceful event that ended before this started." But the one thing that I want to draw attention to is the fact that the police seem to be under a misapprehension that just because they wear a uniform, they think that that just entitles to them to respect.
Respect has to be earned, doesn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. And any goodwill that the police had has just been eviscerated over these past few years.
Yes, because as you say, they've become completely politicized, and obviously they're going to reflect the ideology of the prevailing regime. And that's all they are. They're the enforcement arm of the prevailing regime. So you've got progressive liberal police, and it's as horrific as you'd assume.
If I were to get particularly libertarian, which I know no one wants me to, but I'm going to do anyway, you know, the government acts like an armed gang, just like any criminal gang. Just because they've got authority and they say they have power doesn't mean that they actually deserve it or warrant it or deserve any respect. You know, they use violence to get their own way the same as any criminal does. I don't see them as much different, to be honest. In many ways, criminals at least have a code of honour. They'll do anything to get what they want, clearly.
Well,
yeah, no, there's another take that isn't the full libertarian take, is it? But when there was a time fairly recently where, that notwithstanding, they were still doing a job that the average person would go, "I'm broadly okay with that."
There was still some degree of consent.
Yeah. And that's what's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, of course, is to go back to Morgoth's point about these people who have left and fled to Epping, is because they simply didn't consent to the changes that had been forced upon them living in London. They didn't, you know, and they obviously realised that London was just dwindling more and more into a two-tier society, in which even the worst scumbag migrant, delinquent, would be treated with kid gloves, and they would receive, as Keir Starmer would put it, the full force of the law, mm-hmm. right? You know, we can't also forget that just last year, the police also told that mosque to basically be used as an arsenal, mm-hmm. and you can store your weapons there before you go out, right?
That's an unprecedented break from English law, isn't
people it? People remember these things, right? And they pay attention far more than the government ever gives them credit for.
Do you think we're heading towards just different areas of the country? You know, when I was watching Callum's documentary a while ago, that really bleak one where he talks about the census, I end up thinking British people are just going to retreat to rural pockets and live on kind of reservations. This is how I saw it going, and completely abandon the cities. What you have here is people have abandoned the cities, then they're still pursued. It's like, no, we're putting these people in next to your school. Then they go, right, we've got nowhere else to go, so now it's war. And are we just going to have areas where maybe those people get the message and they do get out of Epping, But so Epping's just like an enclave of former Cockneys. Is it just going to be like that soon?
Well, people can only flee so far. And once their backs are up against a wall, it's like a cornered animal, isn't it? It's at its most dangerous. And when you corner the people who, you know, helped create the largest empire the world has ever known, that's a bad recipe. You're going to have some serious trouble there. And I don't think the government really realises what they're doing to the British people.
What we've never seen is a sort of British no-go area, but Epping or anywhere could become that if this kind of thing carries on. Now, maybe they'll be cracked down upon so brutally that actually they just have to, you know, back down. But it'd be, I say, interesting to see in a really horrific way how
well,
this plays out.
Well, interesting to see in the sense that you feel like in your future you're going to be forced to look at it.
Yeah, right? It's horrible. I woke up today thinking, I can't believe, because I was thinking about Epping, I just can't believe what the degeneration I've seen in my lifetime. It just was unthinkable at one point that, you know, England would be a place where we see these kind of scenes. It's just unthinkable. Here we are.
So if you want to help protect Epping and help the community, I thought that it would be a good idea to share this petition that was put forward by the leader of the council that I referenced earlier. And it's a petition to basically get that migrant hotel shut down and removed from the area. So if you'd like to, you can go and sign that petition, and perhaps, hopefully, it may do some good. But obviously, as I say, I don't endorse violence, but we are seeing it become far more regular. And the tensions and patience of the British people is tested more and more every day.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Don't endorse violence either. But yes, but I don't endorse asylum hotels either.
No, not at all. So the Engaged Few says his firm connection should be to a prison cell. Yes, in Ethiopia, preferably.
I thought that was a play on my name for a second. I was like, what have I done?
I need Josh's ethnic tribal league table of this guy. Is he Oromo or is he Amhara? Do you know what this is referencing?
It'll be his the ethnic group from Ethiopia. So I've got to look up his name. What was his surname again? I'll do a quick ethnicity check.
It was Kebatu. And the Engaged Few says, so since the police are now escorting Pantifa in the counter-protest, should we take bets on how long before they start arming them? Maybe march them past... Well, they are obviously agitators. They are obviously agitators. And also another thing to say about them is that, of course, they're all masked as well. Well, many of them were masked. They're just pathetic cowards. And you know that because they wouldn't do this if they didn't have the armed state protecting them.
I'm still trying to Google this.
That's all right. Would you like to do your segment and I'll Google it for you?
Yes. Right. I'm doing some ethnicity noticing. Right.
Right.
I'm going to get that quickly going. I've got an AI on it. Because AI is excellent at this sort of thing.
Okay.
Only 16 individuals worldwide currently bear this name. But it's all, yeah, Africa.
And one of them found the way here.
Apparently so. Mm. That was very specific. So anyway, let's get on with it, shall we? Britain has allowed children to vote. And by children, I mean 16 and 17-year-olds. And this is quite a surprising development. There has been some campaigning for this sort of thing. Of course, the BBC is asking that demographic. But the Labour Party did pledge this in their election manifesto, so it wasn't necessarily a surprise. And this brings it in line with the Scottish and Welsh elections, which are, of course, their rules are determined by an incredibly left-wing parliament of their own. And Keir Starmer justified this by saying 16 and 17-year-olds are old enough to go out to work and they're old enough to pay taxes and therefore old enough to vote, one would presume.
Yeah, but how many of them do pay taxes, Keir?
Mm.
Right?
I know I didn't.
Oh, they can.
I was that age.
Yeah, but do they?
Also, is a 16 or 17-year-old old enough to be informed to vote as well?
No.
Didn't you love the tax argument, though? Because I was like, oh, that's brilliant. So what you're saying is people who are net recipients shouldn't vote. Mm-hmm. He's tying it to tax contribution. I was like, I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree with this progressive measure, Keir.
But the thing is, I would happily hand in my vote if it meant that I was tax exempt If I didn't have to pay any tax or use any government services, that'd be such a blessing. Mm. And I don't have to bother voting for a party I hate. So
yes. And as they've shown us, if we've learned anything, that's all you have to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
For the past that's very however true. Long I've been alive.
One thing that is worth mentioning that no one's been talking about, but I think is the main thing of concern in this story, is in other changes, people also be able to use bank cards as voter ID. And of course, on a bank card, you don't have a picture of yourself. And so if you have the same bank card that is on the electoral register, even if you're a different person, you could even be a woman and have a man's bank card, and they're not going to question it. As long as you've got the bank card, now you can vote. So what that's going to do is massively increase voter fraud.
Yeah, which and means Labour.
Yes. And it always does. And they've been caught out with this. This isn't some sort of conspiratorial thing. There's no point of contention in Britain about this, that the voting fraud only goes one way, because they found the vote factory in Leicester. Was it Leicester East?
Yeah. Tower Hamlets was another good example.
Yeah, it's basically the diverse areas that vote Labour quite often.
Maybe they'll vote Green
associated.
These days.
Maybe.
Or Independent.
Or Jezza and Sultana.
Mm.
That's true.
It'll backfire, won't it, for Starmer when they all vote Jezza.
Making it sound like Jeremy Clarkson rather than Jeremy Corbyn.
I'm voting for him just to annoy Starmer, didn't you know? In my area, Labour wins such a crushing victory. Last time, Reform and Tories together got less than half the Labour vote. So I wasn't in one of those areas that Peter Hitchens would get annoyed about where, you know, he said, oh, vote Tory, otherwise you'll let Labour in. Labour always going to win, and Greens got second. So my only hope of beating Labour is vote Jezza, who could actually win in my area.
It is also worth mentioning as well that in 1969, the voting age was lowered from 21 to 18 by Labour, and then in the next election, they lost to the Conservatives anyway. So even though I think this is a cynical ploy to try and get some voters, because traditionally younger people have supported Labour, we've seen that the Zoomers are made of different stuff. They're a lot more radical, let's just say that.
On both ends.
Yes.
Both left and right.
Mm-hmm. But I think that particularly young men, young boys, are moving more and more right because they see that the world has nothing for them. And they're right. You know, I've almost got to 30. I've just had to struggle against a hostile society to get here. You know, there's nothing for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, nothing for you is a bit generous. It's openly hostile towards men in general, and therefore particularly young men who are the highest in testosterone and the most out of control, according to our gynocentric society. I sound like a Manosphere podcast. I've gone off on one. But I'm going to start selling some sort of brain pills. And sorry, carry on.
Nick's going to shave his head by the end of this podcast.
Going to sit there shirtless with maybe a chest tattoo. But it's also worth mentioning as well that the youngest people have the lowest turnout. So it's not going to shape elections that much. And I imagine if it's lowered to 16 and 17 year olds, it's going to be even lower again. And I'm going to go through some of the people in the right-wing commentary sphere, and we're going to talk about what people have been saying about it, because I think there is a wide variety of opinion. The left is unequivocally in favour of it, obviously, because they see it as expanding their own franchise, whereas the right has been divided, mostly saying it's bad, but also their emphasis is on lots of different things. I thought this was quite good. At 16, you can't legally marry, buy alcohol or cigarettes, drive. Well, you can have a provisional license. You can drive with someone in the front seat, but I'm being a pedant. Go to war, get a tattoo, do the lottery, be on a jury, buy a house. Well, you can't do that under 30 either. get a full-time job without being in some form of educational training until you're 18. A desperate Labour believe that 16-year-olds should vote. And that is true, that I don't think they're mature enough to have that sort of responsibility. I don't think a 16-year-old should have the same vote as me. I don't think it's fair. I also think that democracy is just an excuse for people to steal my stuff, and I sort of loathe it, because it gives people a sort of veneer of respectability, as if they've got some sort of consent from the people because of, you know, some miserable turnout and very uninfused votes.
Which is how we're in the position where we even have a Labour majority right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just exactly. A Tory vote imploded.
Exactly.
I'm still trying to understand Josh's philosophy, but I think it's going to be a long journey, because you're a libertarian fascist. Is that
what?
No. You're against democracy, but
I'm annoyed by it. I'm not saying we should necessarily do away with it. I just think it's very flawed.
Josh is just a Cromwellian.
Right.
Except I want to keep Christmas.
We might need a Cromwell if our king keeps saying ridiculous things. That's satire, by the way. Don't put me in there.
Sorry, we're dragging you down, Nick. You're going to get yourself in trouble.
I know. I'm going to stay out of jail. Just for a summer.
To be fair, it's you get warm meals and a roof over your head. It's more than I could get in the being a taxpayer.
You get more rights, don't you? Like, oh, you can't keep me in solitary unless I'm Tommy Robinson. You know, get all these rights. Mm.
And here's Callum. You may know him. He was, of course, on the show for a very long time. It's a bit weird if you don't know him. And it's worth mentioning that the justification is, well, they can work, they can pay taxes. And Callum points out that you can work part-time from the age of 14 and in some local areas the age of 13. And so that rationale could be extended to 13-year-old voters, which is a good point to make.
But as you've pointed out towards the beginning of this segment, if they've linked voting to tax, mm-hmm. right, if that's, well, you know...
No what, taxation without representation.
Well, what has been done, you can just, if you just stick something in your manifesto mm-hmm. amongst a bunch of other stuff, and then you win because a lot of the other stuff is really right-wing and based, you can say, well, this was also in the manifesto, we're just carrying it out, and now before you know it, mm-hmm. voting's back up to 21, or just landed nobility, or whoever it was.
Mandatory castration for asylum seekers. George in small
England.
Print.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all there.
Mm-hmm. So another person who's on the show regularly is Lewis, and he says...
Yesterday, in fact.
Really?
Yes.
Ah. This move reeks of desperation. Labour knows just how unpopular this government is and is now trying to pad their support by lowering the voting age. Not only is it short-sighted, it could potentially backfire on the political establishment. Still, I don't welcome this move. And I agree with this almost entirely, that it does seem like a cynical move to get votes. But it could also backfire because... many European countries look at, say, Germany, where the AfD actually did quite well amongst young people, and it was the boomers that they did the worst with, surprise, surprise. Mm. And I think that we're going to see a similar trend, because at the end of the day, what have young people got to lose? It's like, sorry, we've had Labour in different coloured forms for many, many years, basically since the 70s, I would say.
Yeah, I was joking about the Jezza party, but they will vote for left-wing populism, won't they? They will vote for this kind of blame the rich type of thing. They'll either go to the right, and the others will go for the blame the rich route one communism.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't help the Starmer type people. Mm.
But also, a lot of the sort of traditional Marxist and communists are getting frustrated with the sort of liberal centre as well.
Oh, yeah,
many of the same talking points, actually. It's weird. In particular, I've been seeing sort of the Navarra media types saying our talking points. Like, blimey, what's happening to the world?
Yeah.
That left and right are sort of uniting against the middle.
Yeah, I know. Bastani's been liking a lot of Harry's tweets. It's a strange world. He replied to me today, Bastani, with a laugh.
Replied, really? Oh, yeah.
Mate, Bastani, maybe is he like a secret?
Playing the long game.
Well, he wants to. He'll side with us when it suits him. Then he'll come out with all the comedy stuff we weren't expecting.
That does usually happen. Yes. So another person that was formerly of the show, all of the Lotus Eaters have been commenting on this, and Connor was saying that it will backfire. He's talking about young men are public enemy number one. Mm. He's talking about the diaspora of Pakistanis doubling. Of course, he's talking about leftist women will be convinced Labour are accomplices to the stuff in Palestine.
Mm.
And he points out Germany as well. Another good analysis. There's lots of good points that I think add up to a more layered understanding of this.
But is that, sorry, the 16-year-old element, that's maybe the tip of the spear or whatever it's called, but this is just a trend that's happening anyway. People are going to split between populist left and right, more and more anyway, aren't they? Don't you think?
Just it's going
the general
way,
voter base. Yeah, I think the centre, the sort of managerial centre, is just falling apart.
Well, it's got very few actual organic diehard supporters, has it?
It's just because it has no victories to show for itself.
It's, at this point, it's just people who watch The Rest Is Politics.
Ugh.
And watch women's football. It's about 12.
I pity sure. them.
I get
like
so much stick
creatures.
For saying women's football is. I call it a mutually agreed upon. I call it a Soviet level mutually agreed upon fiction. Everyone's like, everyone is telling it. It's good. Do you think it's good? Yes, I also think it's good. No one thinks it's good. They in my football group because I play five a side. They're going, come on England. I'm thinking England aren't playing, are they? I was like, oh, they mean there's women. That's not England. Mm. When you say come on England, no one means the women. This is my least popular view in normie world. It'll be okay on this.
I think it's very sensible of you, Nick.
Thank you.
I reckon I could call up a bunch of mates and beat the women's team. Just like all my old schoolmates. Just like, you want to have a kick about? We're probably, going on 30. We were past our prime, but Yeah. Still.
Those teenagers won, didn't they?
They
against,
did, yeah.
Against the US World Cup winning team.
They were about 14, weren't they?
A very backhanded compliment to say to Rory Stewart, like, well, you're getting more views on women's football. You know?
Double dunk, that is. Yeah. So, speaking of Bastani, actually, he says, besides anything else, votes for 16-year-olds possibly puts the Tories below 50 seats. They are buggered in Lib Dem and Reform marginals. Going to be quite amusing to watch, frankly. The party's about to be nuked. And
I agree.
This is a wonderful revelation that zero seats is going to be ushered in. Because I think...
Back on the menu.
As much as I dislike the Labour Party, I hate the Tories more. Because in many ways, they were more effective at enacting Labour's agenda than Labour are.
And even when they're out of office, they're still...
Scandals, yeah.
Like the Afghan one the other day.
Although, and I argued the other day, somewhat satirically, but you should actually vote Tory over Reform because you've got Jenrick, who's to the right of Farage. Farage admitted it to the New Statesman.
Yeah.
Said Jenrick's to the left of him on to the right of him on immigration, and Farage admitted he was to the left of not only Jenrick but the rest of the country. I'm like, sorry, what's the point of your party again?
Yeah. I thought it was why are you here?
Yeah. Yeah. So one interesting development is lots of people were coming out and talking about raising the voting age from 18 to higher, and it's good that you're here, Nick. Because here you are on the screen.
Sensible, yeah.
Would you like to read your own tweet?
I can do. The voting age should be raised to at least 25 in line with the full development of the prefrontal cortex.
I appreciate that. Good psychology knowledge there.
To be safe, I'd set it at 30 and obviously men only. What an outrageous tweet. Do you know what? I got some funny responses to that. Do you know one person who responded to that was Annunziata Rees-Mogg.
Jacob Rees-Mogg's sister.
Jacob Rees-Mogg's sister. Now, you notice I got, 2,000 likes? She only got 14, so you judge who's more popular. She said, as women's prefrontal cortex matures a full 2 years ahead of men's and is considerably larger, surely it should only be women who can vote, according to Nick's logic. Well, no, Annunziata, because you fail to fulfill 50% of the criteria. The quiz would go, are you male or female? Male, yeah, female, you've lost already. Then it goes, and do you have a fully developed prefrontal cortex? So it's not about how early or the size. It's about, are you a man who also has a prefrontal cortex fully developed? But unfortunately, she failed to understand that perhaps her prefrontal cortex isn't all it's cracked up to be. By the way, tiny bit of gossip. At the GB Christmas party like a year ago, whatever, the drinks were free. Then suddenly they were really expensive. And I was like, and I was talking to Annunziata, and I like offered to get a drink, bought her a really expensive drink. I noticed she let me buy it despite being like... in the poshest family in England. Then she sort of sidled off, never got me a drink back. Outside of a date context, in a date context, a man should pay, maybe. I understand that. This is just a non-date context. Where was her feminism then?
That's true.
Sorry, that was a really long build-up just to say that.
Just sat him mogging Ms. Mogg.
Well, she tried to mog me on Twitter. Come at the king, you best not miss.
I like the fact that you've taken a new segment to the point of she didn't buy me a drink back.
Where's your feminism then? That's all I'm saying.
I think my half-Scottish nature comes out where when someone doesn't buy someone a drink back, it's sort of infuriating.
It's the sneaky kind of way she did it. She kind of let me pay for them. It was something about the way... I was like, this is how posh people have survived so long. They don't actually pay for anything. Do you know what I mean? That kind of posh aristocratic thing where you mend things and you let other people buy stuff and you've never bought anything since the 1800s.
Women, buy men drinks or we'll take away your vote.
To be fair, a lot of women do buy men drinks. I've had a few drinks bought for me.
In a date context, I'm totally against it.
But no, of course, yeah.
Okay, good, we're all clear. But in this context, pay up.
And here is David Vance saying, rather than lowering the voting age from 18 to 16, it should be raised to 30. That's even higher than yours.
I said 30, didn't I?
25.
I said 25 minutes, and I said ideally 30.
Yes.
Ideally 30.
I'm trying to be a moderate, Josh, you know.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can understand
holding
that.
You back from 45, just like...
And even foreigners weighed in. This man is a member of the New South Wales Parliament in Australia. And he says, seriously, if you want better politics, we should raise the voting age to 30. You've got to respect it. He's an actual parliamentarian as well. What a legend.
Can I ask you about the whole women and wife and kids thing? Because I believe Ed Dutton has said this, and I've seen old Mr. Wong, formerly of Lotus Eaters, say it as well, that you should have a wife and kids. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. Like, Jesus didn't. There's some pretty base blokes without wife and kids. I'm not even trying to give myself the vote, because I've always said you should have property. And even when I didn't have property, I was like, you know, I'm totally down with that rule. I don't know if a man should have to have a wife and kids to have a vote. I think you get some base.
Because the about best the, way is a net tax contributor.
I agree.
Yeah,
I think that's the best cut off.
Because you get these normies I play football with. They watch the rest is politics. They've got two or three kids, but you want them voting and not me. They're going to vote for Starmer. So. Mm.
Also, not all property is equal, is it? I mean, you could own some property and it'd be like $5,000 a field.
A boat or a little...
Yeah, you could be living on a houseboat.
Rosieing Jim could vote.
Oh, there's a flashback to a long time ago. David Curtin says, Starmer's regime to lower the voting age to 16. This is insanity. If anything, it should be increased to 21. That's back to the 1969 boundary, I suppose, where the majority of people have a job and work for a living. That's another good argument there, I think. And then, so this guy, I think, is the former editor of The Sun and the founder of TalkSport. I'd raise the voting age to 21. Watching YouTube and Netflix can't be the sole justification for participating in democracy. I'm surprised at how many people are talking about removing franchise from people. I mean, obviously it doesn't bother me.
Well, now that
there are plenty of people I would like to remove, but...
Mm. Well, it's interesting.
From voting as well.
I suppose a certain segment of the viewers will just be thinking, just go the whole hog, get rid of voting. Done. You know what I mean?
Well, with the options we've got at the minute, in a functional democracy, people would be in favour of it. It's just that we've got, which flavour of kick in the nuts do you want?
Mm. Well, just the people that say democracy doesn't work because it turns everyone into a political agent, then you have to get the propaganda, mass media, then you get social media where everyone becomes a political actor, so it has to be constantly propagandised 24/7. You get rid of that, you just let the elite get on with it. This assumes, though, a sort of righteous elite, which obviously we haven't seen for a long time, maybe ancient Greece or something.
I think if you can trace your family back 500 years and you're an aristocrat, I'll get behind that.
Yeah.
They're normally pretty switched on people. Okay. Yeah. I'm not actually suggesting that seriously.
Except a nunziata Rees-Mogg, obviously.
Yeah, we've got exceptions, don't worry. And... finally, there were some predictions. Here's Amy Gallagher, who I've interviewed before, actually. She makes the prediction that the next push will be for foreign nationals to be given the vote. And now, this seems a little bit out of the paradigm at the minute in Britain. But of course, look at the United States, and what often goes on in the US seems to eventually find its way to the UK. And they were allowing foreign nationals to vote. They were letting illegals vote in their elections pretty shamelessly and openly, weren't they? And I think that it may well... come to that, and if the franchise slowly expands more and more, the justification becomes stronger and stronger in their minds, and so that may well happen.
But with postal votes and just your bank card, it's basically that anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you could easily get around it, and you shouldn't vote fraudulently. I'm not just saying that to, you know, what's the word, toe the line of the law. I genuinely mean it, that, you know, it is important to be legitimate, and so please don't cheat.
I agree.
And I suppose to end this, of course this is an absurdity, it's a cynical ploy to win votes, but it may well backfire, and I hope it does.
It's also very encouraging to that Labour have actually done this, to just put that dialogue out there. And now you've got all these people going, you know what, like, aside from what the weird, like, you know, globalist commies want, like, what should the voting age actually be? You know, it's got people having that conversation, so I think we should keep having it.
I think it should be 80. All the really elderly people,
so
who are very racist.
What, the final Tory voters?
Is the pension not high enough for you, Josh, already? You've only got a triple lock. You'll have discovered, like, quadruple.
I've got too much money in my bank account. I'm not in enough poverty yet, so I want to give it more to pensioners so they can go on cruises, like my parents.
Quintuple.
They're going on, like,
pension.
Their fourth holiday, my parents. It's unbelievable.
Do you want to go through your Rumble rant?
Oh, yes. Whinging. I hope they have a nice time, though. Where are we? Okay. Bank card voting is a brilliant idea. There definitely won't be any industrial scale voter fraud taking place. Very true. Based Ape says perhaps her prefrontal cortex isn't all it's cracked up to be. It's the most subtly savage insult I've ever heard.
You're welcome.
Brilliant.
Not Just a String says nobody could tell a young person the difference between Conservatives and Labour at this point. They can vote Reform to troll instead, even if ineffective. Dragon Lady Chris says voting is not a right, it's something that needs to be earned. Service guarantees citizenship. I see you've got the Starship Troopers perspective. Mm-hmm. And the engaged few, in Bowes, Britain, only landowners would vote. That would just be boomer whitewash, wouldn't it? or red wash, or blue wash. Luca may not support violence, but if he were to be called to jury duty, I disavow Luca. Why would you say that, Luca?
I disavow myself entirely. Mm-hmm. I do.
And I think you read that bottom.
I did, there. Yes. I just forgot to click it.
Okay. Take us away, Nick.
Okay. Well, don't we finish at 2? Have I got like 6 minutes to do my...
No, we can overrun.
Not till 2:30.
Is it 2:30? We do the comments at the end, don't we? So is it normally... When's it normally end?
2:30.
2:30.
Well, no, but the segment bit.
We carry on sometimes until the last 5 minutes if we have to.
How do I move this article up and down then? Because I've been away. I think I've already done the new studio once, guys. So let me just be a boomer for a sec. All right. Okay. So, because I knew that your voting one would do very well, Josh, but I thought about trying to snatch the voting topic. I thought, no, I'll let Josh do that one. I'm here for the light relief, the comic relief. So let's just have a bit of fun at the end. And this is the white man who pretended to be black to get published.
Great idea.
So, yes, I wonder why he thought of that idea. It's a young poet who pretended to be a gender-fluid member of the Nigerian diaspora and wrote intentionally bad poems. He says he got 47 of them published. I love that. And in the email version, I couldn't really link to it, but there's an email version they send out, the free press this is, and it said at the end of it, it soon spiraled out of control. I'm like, what happened? Did he accidentally... did he become the Democratic nominee? Like,
he was method acting so much that he became that Nigerian gender-fluid person.
Just studying Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in Tropic Thunder.
Right, he moved in with him. So he wrote a series of ridiculous poems, this guy. And there's a guy called Aaron Barry, who's a 29-year-old English language tutor from Vancouver. And there's a guy, by the way, writing the article called River Page, who also sounds like a fake name, but presumably that's real. And this is one of the poems he wrote. I don't know if we're allowed to even display this, because Carl doesn't like the old swear words, does he, on the show? Shall I click off?
I think it'll be okay.
This is basically, I don't want to break Carl's rules while he's away, but the poem is essentially a series of question marks and obscenities. It's to question mark or not to question mark. William Shakespeare's 3? Little bleep. That is the question. I want Billy Bard... 3? To spank 3? My bleep. You get the idea.
This is like something that would be scrawled on a wall in an insane asylum in excrement.
Exactly. This is Arkham Asylum stuff. But that got published. Oh, it's not signed me in on this one. That's going to be a problem. So I'm not signed in on that. How do we sort that? That could be a problem because you're not going to be able to read it.
I have a solution.
Yeah. I've got it online.
It's okay. I will message Harry the solution.
Okay. Brilliant. Because I got it on mine. I thought I'd solve that, but forgot about the people out there. Anyway, I can carry on. So you got that poem published in Jake magazine.
He already knows it.
despite how bad it is. Oh, he's going to Archive.
Harry.
Let's see if Archive works. Otherwise, I'm just going to tell you it all. Anyway, he pretended to be a series of different names. One of them was Dirt Hog Savage Respectfully. That was one of the names. One of them, have we got it working?
Yes.
This is a slight delay here, which is throwing me off. One of them was Adele Nwankwo, which was a gender-fluid member of the Nigerian diaspora who's published dozens of comically bad poems in a wide array of indie literary magazines. One of them was about a lesbian WWE-style wrestler that features lines such as, "You want to know how I feel after being cheated out of a victory over Pat Patriarchy at a Survivor Series? I'm furious. I'm hot. I'm so mad I could kiss a woman I don't even like right now." That was in one of the
taken
poems.
Straight out of bad pornography.
And they're like, this is good stuff. This is great. So he took on all these different names. For the obvious reason, he couldn't get published. He started calling himself Jasper Salon, which was another fake name. And they say...
Most sensible name he's come up with so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually believable.
But that was his more believable fake one. And he's, of course, the reason is he says, "I just was not in the demographic they would even consider accepting in some cases. They were openly advocating on their websites for the voices of the disenfranchised and all of this stuff." I'm like, wow, it'd probably be a lot easier to get in if I had some sort of connection to one of these identities. He just thought of lying as a good idea.
What I love is how ridiculous it's come since, you know, the days of like the late 1700s, early 1800s, where women would write, you know, under pseudonyms, you know, male pseudonyms, in order to get their works published, because obviously society just took men's work more seriously. And now we're at the point now where it's like, oh man, I can't get published unless I'm a gay trans black woman.
Yeah, yeah. And it's completely true. And they compared this to an incident, there he is, very white, but he didn't show his picture. What he did was he didn't, if they wanted pictures, he just said, no, I don't like my picture. And if they wanted him to read poems, he just said, I don't like my voice. So you got around it that way. And in 2015, they compare it to this Michael Derek Hudson, a middle-aged white librarian in Indiana, saw his poem, The Bees, the Flowers, Jesus, Ancient Tigers. How do you pronounce that? Well, I always forget how you pronounce it.
Sidon.
Sidon, yes, thank you. Adam and Eve, rejected by publishers 40 times. This inspired him to try submitting it under the pen name Yi Fen Chao. Did you
hear
about
that's a terrible name for a poem. That's so wordy. It's like a full summary of what you're talking about.
Yes, they actually did really well. It was judged by a guy called Sherman Alexie, who's one of these guys they made us study back in English at university. He was a Native American writer, and he judged it. And it was included anyway in the annual Best American Poetry Anthology. Once he said he was the Chinese name, and immediately he was accused of yellow face, of course. But you're forcing us to do yellow face. What are we going to do?
Such a funny... It has a funnier ring to it than blackface, doesn't it?
You made me do yellow face.
It's like yellow-bellied, yellow-faced. It sounds like some sort of juvenile insult.
Yellow face. Yeah, I know. It's from Back to the Future.
Is it really?
No, but you know when he calls him yellow? He's like, don't call me yellow.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Probably shouldn't be saying any of that. according to... Anyway, it goes on and on. And, oh, yeah, and it reminds us of this Joyce Carol Oates tweet. She's that novelist. And she said in 2022, a friend who is a literary agent told me that he cannot even get editors to read first novels by young white male writers, no matter how good. They're just not interested. This is heartbreaking for writers who may, in fact, be brilliant and critical of their own privilege. She lost it right at the end there. If you can't get published as the white man, and you have to change your name. Probably indicates you don't actually have this privilege, right? It's like, guys, I just want to get published so I can talk about my privilege. Yeah, but you're so hated and non-privileged that we're not actually going to even publish it. She hasn't seen the contradiction there. But yeah, this has been the case for ages, of course. And it just, I didn't even think of it until I'd just finished making my notes on this. Actually, this happened to me in comedy, back when I still did comedy. I wasn't given a gig because I was a straight white man. It wasn't even a gig I'd asked for, but someone else had put me forward for it. And I sort of wryly pointed this out on Twitter with all the doxing information taken out. And I just got absolutely hammered by the entire comedy industry, like big comedians and stuff, like Jason Manford, just piled on brutally. And cancelled, basically. And I was the victim. I was the one who couldn't get work, but no one seemed to see that. So this happens in all the arts. So that was Joyce Carol Oates, and let me now continue. And it goes on, for now, there are still plenty of young, white, straight men who feel publishing's obsession with identity politics has kept them boxed out, and they're angry about it. It's not really just a feeling, is it? They literally are being boxed out, aren't they?
Well, yeah, in all aspects of our civilization. The entire Western world is boxing out white men.
It's not really a feeling. Have I highlighted
it? It's a fact. My facts don't care about your feelings.
I wonder which way it'll make the 16-year-old white boys vote.
Yeah.
To be fair, I wasn't writing poetry at 16.
You look like you could have done.
Oh. Right, Luca, that's it. It's the hair, isn't it? It's the hair.
It gets more and more absurd. It really can't get more absurd, but equally absurd. The first poem to ever get picked up was the Yar Jar Gar Har one. Salon told me when we first spoke, he was referring to one of two poems he published under the name of Adele Nwankwo in the Tofu Ink Arts Press. That's a real thing.
Are you sure this guy's not just a correspondent for BBC?
Tofu Ink Arts is about as lefty as it could possibly
sound. I know, the whole thing
sounds
like a parody, doesn't it? Anyway, he was shocked that the poem got published. It contains lines like voodoo practic castor oil drip drip, which he said was just nonsense made up Creole. And they accepted
voodoo practic castor oil drip drip.
Yeah, see, it works.
It just works
when Josh does it. Anyway, he was influenced, of course, by various literary hoaxes, the Ern Malley hoax, where they pretended conservative writers pretended to do modernist poetry. And they were lauded. And, of course, our old good friend James Lindsay had a similar thing, didn't he, with academic papers. Shout out, James. And, and so, of course, he was inspired by all of those. It's just another example, isn't it, of a similarly absurd thing. There was another interesting part, though, where there was this one guy he tricked called Chris Talbot, who the Free Press insist on calling they. I don't know why they are still playing that game.
One of those.
I can tell it's a bloke from his name.
To be fair, Chris is a unisex name.
Oh, how dare you? It's a good point.
Sorry.
They were right to call it a they. I mean, Chris is rarely, with a C-H-R-I-S, it's rarely a woman.
That's true.
That's almost.
I'm just
never.
Being a pedant.
You are, Josh. It's why I've missed you so much. I'm just trying to find it where this guy would publish. Here you go. This person Talbot, who Josh is saying is a legitimate they, would charge double for freelance editing services if you're white, and they'd pay marginalized people, but not cis white people. Only the marginalized, you know, who are the so-called marginalized. It's starting to sound like there may be some flaws in this, but he'd pay them and not the white people, which is extraordinary as well, or would be extraordinary in a normal world. Anyway, this Barry guy got two novels published as well. Under the name of a S.A.B. Marcy. I'm just trying to find this bit where it's kind of annoying. So I'm trying to scroll on my thing and this thing. I'm not sure about this double scrolling technique. Basically, what happened is he's turned to novels and he got two novels published. But then the second guy was fine once he found out his real identity, because he just says, no, it was good work. It doesn't matter. This guy Rosenblum, he says, I didn't care. I thought it was funny. The work is very good. That's what's important to me. Artists are always putting on a persona. So he didn't worry about it at all. But the first guy was a guy called Derek White, who got so annoyed, he said, I haven't published a white male author for 2 years because I don't want to deal with you guys. If I'd known you were a white male author, I would not have accepted the book.
That's why you did it.
That's so explicit.
I know. That's what Barry's claiming he said to him. And of course, this guy White denies it. He says, no, it's not that I don't deal with straight white men, but if you looked at the context of the book, for a white man to write this book is absolutely wrong. It would be unethical for me to publish it. It turns out the book makes use of the N-word. But
hey, we coined it, all right?
But this guy, Barry, claims it was used ironically and it was necessary for the authenticity of the story.
Absolutely.
So what he did, he based it on his girlfriend's experience, and she says, like, yeah, it was his ex-girlfriend. She's like, yeah, it was my experience. But he pretended to be her, basically. He used, like, a name. Mm. And this guy felt deceived. But it goes on. The guy kind of outs himself a little bit by saying all this stuff about how he doesn't really take white guys anymore. So, and by the way, how white is this? This is a white guy who's so white he's called Derek White, but he won't take white men. He said
it's like the anti nominative determinism, isn't it?
Yeah. He says he's published white guys. He goes, look, I mean, so many of us are just trying to do the right thing. Yeah.
Some of my best publications are white guys.
Yeah. I've published too many white guys. I do ignore submissions because if you know what it's like in the publishing world, I receive tons of submissions and they're usually white guys and it's just not interesting. I mean, I'm a white guy, so I'm just interested in other material and other people's viewpoints, just a kind of wild kind of backtracking, just throwing everything at it. It's just, he goes, you can call it affirmative action, you can call it what you want. I'm calling it racism because, you know, they call me a liberal, but that's what I'm calling it. I was trying to give someone a chance. I think it's harder for black women to get published. Well, it's obviously not, is it? Because he changed his name to black woman to get published. But they just double down on this sort of illusory reality of like 1948 or something.
I think the elephant in the room here is what the publishers really think is, regardless of whether they have the name of the person, they prefer the poems of the white people because they're giving them awards, they're publishing them, and they find that actually maybe some of the urban black women that are writing poetry are not quite to their standards. Which is okay, you know, you can have preferences.
The best writers have been white men. Not always straight, but they've been white men. And they've been, I think, you want to go poetry, Milton, Donne, you want to go Shelley, Byron, you can go whoever you like, right? You can go through the whole thing. It's a lot of white, Eliot, it's a lot of white books. Plays, we've got Shakespeare and a few others. Novels, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Herman Hesse, Knut Hamsun, whoever you like, Tolkien. Dickens, Zola, Balzac. I'm just saying.
Tell you've studied literature.
And who else have you got? I'm not trying to be harsh. Women, you've got Charlotte Bronte, Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. Black writers, Akabe.
Who?
And that's it.
Alexander.
Ralph Ellison wrote Invisible Man. That was
Alexander
good.
Dumas. Free Musketeers.
James Baldwin. Look, it's just the reality. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be, on brand for this podcast or anything.
How dare you?
I know, so sorry. And just to comment on it, came from this Australian writer, Matthew Sinai, and he makes the kind of liberal, typical argument. He says, it's a sort of reasonable liberal argument. Voguish privileging of increasingly arcane identity categories not only hurts the arts in general terms, it hurts budding artists, especially those who are from so-called marginalized groups, quote, the soft bigotry of low expectations, that's just a very liberal phrase here, quite often co-signs these writers to an embarrassing spectacle of publishing undercooked and poorly constructed work. And of course, that is true as well. He says the Echolalia Review Project has proven that identity fetishization in the poetry world literally comes at the expense of the art form. Yeah, of course, the standards are low. If you're not going to insist on any standards and just publish any slop full of question marks and obscenities, then of course it will lower the standards because you don't need to be any good.
But the thing is as well, good art, it doesn't really matter who made it. Like, I've listened to some of Charles Manson's music and I think it's good. I don't approve of the man.
Right.
No, it's okay. I don't approve of John Lennon as a human being, but I like the Beatles.
You like the songs, not the killing spree.
Yeah.
He also wrote with Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys.
I know, yeah. That's how it was recorded. The Beach Boys were the ones that recorded it.
Never Learn Not to Love. Is that right? That was one of the titles.
I think it might be. One of his most famous songs is Home Is Where You're Happy. It's quite catchy, actually.
Here you go. Never doubt my Beach Boys / Manson knowledge. Never Learn Not to Love is a song recorded by the Beach Boys. The song is an altered version of Cease to Exist, written by the Manson family leader, Charles Manson. So.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
Yes. Beach Boys is my kind of expert area.
Yeah, we're sort of opposite ends of the Atlantic 1960s equivalent, because my favourite band's the Beatles, yours is the Beach Boys, isn't it?
We'll have to fight after. In Lad's Hour, we'll
fight. But I like both, and I also think Pet Sounds, as an album, is much better than anything the Beatles put together.
Well, that's true, but they're just, the Beach Boys are a completely different level. We can't get into it now, but... But they're also straight white men, by the way. Yeah. Just to bring it full circle, just to try and get a nice closing. Because I don't really have a closing on that. I've already used up all my closers. So that's all. That's what I had. I mean, it's a little more trivial topic, but I just thought it's kind of this kind of thing that was big a while ago, wasn't it? It's like, you know, the anti-woke stuff. It's not
trivial to people who actually want to go into poetry or writing.
Right.
Is it?
No,
that could ruin their entire life.
And when I say trivial, I wasted my life doing comedy thinking, you know, the same thing happened in that. You hit against a wall where you realise, I'll never know if I'm good enough or not because they're telling me I can't have an agent or can't get anywhere anyway on grounds of my immutable characteristics. So it's like, I hit that wall as well. And then people can always cite the three guys that have made it, James Acaster or something. Mm. There's always exceptions. But as a general rule, you're like, oh, there's no point in me continuing in this because the doors are all shut.
I can end this on a white pill if you like.
Go on.
So I think that
you can't pretend, by the way, to be a black gender fluid woman in comedy as easily because
you've got to be on stage.
A lot of face paint. Go on.
Yeah, all the face paint is very expensive. Well, one good thing is that the prevailing direction that things are going in is that everything's going to be online. There's not as many people gatekeeping industries now because you can go directly to an audience online, can't you? And if your stuff is good, people will come to it. They're not as gatekeepy as the people who are these editors and publishers. People will, if they're looking for good poetry, won't care nearly as much as these people will. And so just go on the internet and do your own thing. And that is where you should seek your success. Make a name for yourself and be self-made. Don't go via these people because they won't do you any favours. And as with many, you know, bands and artists, they come to realise that their agents, their publishers, their managers screw them over in the end anyway. Work for yourself.
Yeah,
Dick Whittington of the internet, there just is, going online and making your fortune.
Mm-hmm. No, there is something in that. Of course, that's what you've got to do. But at the same time, there is something, self-publishing does lack that kind of that curation, you know, where you'd rather, I mean, you'd rather there were still people who were looking for quality and would publish it. Because when you self-publish, I mean, look at the publishing world now. You walk in any bookshop and you just see this sort of it's just entirely feminine coded.
It's a shrine to leftism, basically. Yes.
It's a shrine to leftism. It's always
Lots
like the Antifa handbook.
Are always...
I hate white people. But it's also women. It's also women basically run publishing. So every book is kind of feminine. Because who are the best writers? It's difficult white blokes. You know, it's weird white blokes like some of the people I listed. You know, Dostoevsky and Hamsun. These people are all, you know, it's sort of your crazy white bloke who's inspired. It doesn't have to be white. But it's not done by committee based on what the current political ideology is what I'm trying to say. They don't all have to be white, but many were. Kafka's another one. Anyway, that's my bit. I'll let you get onto the old comments.
Sure, okay. I'll just borrow that mouse.
I do like Kafka. It was one of those writers where I thought, I really need to read it in its original language to get the sort of gist of it. So I was so autistic about reading philosophy that I actually learnt French just to read.
Really?
Camus and Sartre and all the existentialists, even though Camus rejected the label, but I still lump him in.
I want to do some Kafka on Chronicles, actually, at some
really?
Point soon, yeah, but I won't be learning German for it, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, the trial becomes more and more relevant, doesn't it?
It does,
yeah. Arsene Pearson compared our experience to that recently.
The Habsification says, a dictatorship of Jeremy Clarkson is the only solution.
True.
Pot bellies for all.
I don't know what it refers to, but it's absolutely right.
I suspect Josh's segment. Engage View says, J.T. Leroy, version 2. A writer publishes a novel based on his childhood as a trans truck stop sex worker and later turns out to be a woman.
Yeah, I remember that now, the J.T. Leroy. It was when I was actually working in a bookshop. Another thing it vaguely reminded me of was the James Frey A Million Little Pieces, when everyone got obsessed with the fact that he'd fictionalized his autobiography. And like Oprah and everyone, like, how could you lie to us? And to me, the whole thing was absurd because it's fiction. It's writing anyway. When you write down your life story, it's not some sort of literal transcript of what happened. It's incredibly selective. It's filtered through the medium of language. So I don't want to get too postmodern on you, but like, it's already writing. So the idea that like this, you tricked us thinking this was the literal truth. I read the book. It was an incredibly dramatized account. It read like fiction anyway. They all went mad because they said it was his life story and it embellished. But of course it embellished. Anyway, sorry. Slight digression.
It is inevitable, isn't it? That, you know, if Bill Cosby wrote an autobiography, he's not going to say, I made them drink the purple water, is he?
Right. But it's already based on your recollection. Anyway, we could go on.
And Habitification says, all this reminds me of the book Black Like Me. The author, John Howard Griffin, pretended to be black by putting shoe polish on his face during the segregation era America.
We've all been there.
Oh, yes. All right. Let's go to the video comments, Harry.
Oh, yeah.
If we have any today.
No one even there.
He is there. I can see his hair blowing in the wind, yes. Majestically.
Big black tumbleweed of hair.
Something I've noticed is that whenever there's a very hot day, there's not a single cloud in the sky. You know, it's always cooler in the shade, and clouds provide shade. But cloud seeding sprays silver iodide into the air, forcing clouds to turn into rain. So we can easily assume that cloud seeding is causing all these unreasonably hot days.
Wait, what? Can we? I mean, if cloud seeding is causing the hot days, why are the Saudis doing it? Surely that's the last thing a Saudi wants, is more heat. It's like, you know what? It's not sunny enough in Saudi Arabia.
Maybe they're just doing it to the West as a bioweapon.
Mm-hmm. It's working.
Everyone knows it's always sunny in Saudi Arabia.
I would watch that show. I really would.
You've got aircon in here, at least. I'm in a new build, which are like insulated into oblivion.
My flat is horrible.
30 degrees the whole time. I haven't had sleep for weeks. Mm-hmm.
What I do is I get a fan and just point it to my face, and it feels like I've got a poltergeist in the room because my sheet periodically lifts up.
That's all you can do. We need aircon now because of natural climate variance or cloud seeding. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? And especially the new builds, they're just... Anyway, it's a bit of a...
They're too insulated.
They're too insulated. A builder told me. It's the amount of insulation...
Next time I meet someone from Insulate Britain, I'm giving them a swirly because I'm just like, I've been sweating because of you dickheads.
Yeah.
It's all right. We're not going on YouTube
I went home anymore. To the lakes in my parents' house, just totally cool. 26 degrees out. Mm. Just cool. It's an old house. Anyway, sorry. That was completely irrelevant. Carry on. Oh, no, it was the cloud seeding that sent me off. Mm-hmm.
We reading the written comments? Oh, no, here we are.
We got 30 years worth of files right here in this computer that are gonna bring you down.
Oh no.
Power down!
Where'd all the files go?
Bam! We gotta definitely write a song about how we do not diddle kids. Do not diddle kids, it's no good diddling kids.
There is no quicker way for people to think that you are diddling kids than by writing a song about it.
Isn't it a bit weird, this Epstein stuff? Like Trump the other day, he was like, Pam Bondi was trying to talk. He's like, can I just, do you really want to, you want to talk about it? It's so weird. Epstein, there's so serious things. It was the weirdest I've ever seen him. I said he reminded me of when the murderer speaks to Columbo. You know, the Columbo's like, well, are you sure, Lieutenant? I mean, we can if you want. I mean, really? You want to go in this room again? Like, you know, well, absolutely fine. But it was this kind of really weird, like, obfuscation. I was like, that's the weirdest I've seen Trump. Let him talk about it.
He's handled it so poorly. It's like, you know what you're saying about the British state trying to aggravate people? Yeah. It's sort of like Trump with this. He's trying to look as guilty as humanly possible. It's like, I want to be remembered as a kiddie diddler. Please don't cut that out of context.
Hello, Lindsay is out of context.
Oh, sometimes you forget you're in front of a camera.
Are there any more, Harry? No, okay, thank you. We'll just go through a few comments for the segments then. Russian Garbage Human says, my younger brother was forced to study some horrific poems.
He's bringing it up, actually, never mind. I was just going to say, Benjamin Zephaniah I did in school. But sorry.
Oh, right, okay.
Interrupted you.
Sorry. A few years back for GCSE English, and it's all part of the unseen work curriculum. Works that weren't noticed because racism or something. The British by Benjamin. Yeah, I remember. Is this that poem that was going around about like all the different waves of immigration that was coming to Britain?
He also did that menu one, didn't he, that was horrific.
We read a book by him, which was even worse, called Gangster Rap. And in the end, I think someone gets shot. And in front of my entire class, I'm just like, good, they were bad people.
Like, you've always been based, Josh. This just reminded me, I should have said it in the segment maybe, or maybe it's boring, but I was from the home of Wordsworth, who literally lived in where he was buried. And we didn't do Wordsworth at A-level. We did six women poets.
Oh, really?
All this stuff was already happening. Then at university, we're forced to do colonial this and that, post-colonial thingy. So we didn't get to read Conrad. We get to read a KB's deconstruction of Conrad, calling him racist. And it's just like, can we actually read the canon first? And even before I knew that I was like right wing or something, I didn't really know. I just was going, can we read the canon? Can we read the classics? I was just so furious about it.
It starts intuitively, doesn't it?
Starts intuitively, yeah. Mm. And, you know, they were forcing us to read all this Derrida and all this garbage. Anyway.
I actually recently did on Chronicles Conrad's Heart of Darkness. And I thought it was a really, really interesting read. There's a lot of very base readings that you can take from that if you want to, despite what your school teachers might tell you what it's actually about.
It's funny you bring that up, actually, because I remember being at university and the thing that sort of started winding me up about the left, because I went into university not hostile to the left, but not really of the modern left either, but they were just being rude to people, and I found that sort of unforgivable, and it annoyed me, and I was like, you're so rude, I don't want to be associated with you, I don't want to be in the same room as you, you horrible people. And from there it slowly spiraled to I hate you.
Can happen.
Rude people don't get the vote.
That's true. I hate rude people.
Jimbo G says, what gets me about the government replacement plan is that they've done it with complete impunity. There doesn't appear to be any consideration of them facing consequences for what they've done. In fact, they seem to be revolted that the general public aren't begging for more. We're being run by foreign spies. They should have their assets stripped, hard drives checked and put in prison. Well, honestly, I genuinely thought in my naivety that the murder of David Amos would have actually been some sort of turning point in the establishment, because I thought, well, actually, it's one of you now that has actually been killed because of the mass immigration that you've brought into the country. And instead, they just used it as an excuse to crack down on online censorship.
Online safety stuff, yeah.
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah. And I was it, like, it right, they're again. Beyond...
That stunned me. And also when the speaker, you know, when people were intimidated and the speaker actually changed the rules on that day to avoid the Gaza vote, whatever it was, I can't remember the exact technicality, but he was responding to threats. That's when I realized, oh, because the conventional wisdom is, oh, when it happens to you, it'll be different and you just don't care about the person. They can't even protect themselves now. That's the really disturbing thing. Well, not the really disturbing thing, but that's not even true. They can't even protect themselves.
And you'd think, okay, well, it was David Amos. So wasn't their life, was it? It was someone else's life. You're still in power. But then when you look at MPs like Jess Phillips and other such types, it's like they're going to lose their seat.
Lose power, yeah.
And yet still, there's no pivot.
There's no stop
to it. We just need different people in power. And Fuzzy Toaster says, you're being racist. Yes. But that's right wing. Yes. That's bad. You're a bad person. For you.
Bane at the end there.
Yeah, Bane. All right. Do you want to go through yours, Josh?
Sure. Someone online, a segment about 16-year-olds. I know how to speak Gen Alpha. Tell them that Josh's muse streak is 12 years no cap, bro. Is an aura farming Rizzler, and you should yeet your vote at him for maximum gyat.
That sounds like one of those poems that I read out.
It did. The annoying thing is, I've spent enough time on the internet that I know what those things mean.
I know what some of them
I just
are.
Don't approve.
It makes me wonder, has any generation bastardised the English language harder than Gen Alpha? And they've barely been around yet.
To be fair, I'm very much against slang generally. If it deviates from the 19th century, except with a few exceptions with some 1960s slang, which I feel is useful, like calling someone cool, you know, that's 1960s.
Or saying you dig it and stuff like that.
Well, maybe not that. That's not aged very well, has it? I dig it, man.
Wizard.
Derek Power says, so if you can vote using a bank card, does that mean the populace are like lobbying groups funneling money into the government? I'm not entirely sure how that works. Do you know what they mean?
I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, he's alluding to the fact that it'll be like scanning it on a machine and you're actually paying with your card. I don't think you actually have to pay. It's just a proof of ID. But I think you're probably joking. And Canis Familiaris says, let's be real, the voting age reduction has more to do with the relative demographics of older and younger Brits than anything else. That's also true, although the boomers are surprisingly stubborn in their leftism. And then, I can read a couple more, can't I? Northblood says, in my mind it should be show ID when you vote, and to vote you must be at least 25 and pay tax. If you're on the dole, tough shit for you, get a job. Hear, hear.
Simple as.
If it were up to me, there wouldn't be one.
What a job.
No jobs for paupers, no. Back to the workhouse. Yeah, we had it right. We figured it all out. It's like, oh, sorry, you want free money? Oh, you're going to have to go to the workhouse. Sorry. Smash up some rocks, work some machinery or something, lose some fingers.
Have you finished to read a few of mine?
Of course.
I'm saying mine, but the ones under my bit.
Yeah, go for it.
Not really mine. I don't own them. Sophie, reminds me of when female author Carmen Moller won some sort of big literary prize and included a huge cast prize. Yeah, it turned out Carmen was three white dudes. Yeah, it was three Spanish blokes, yeah, and they presented themselves as a single woman. That's how it takes. Three blokes adds up to a single woman now because they're less valuable. Omar Awad, these days they'll publish obvious AI-generated books. If you train it off black data, can it really be said the author isn't black? I think this is going to catch on with hilarious results. Good point. AZ Desert Rat, is that like Az or AZ? Is it Arizona? Arizona, okay. Probably Andrew Doyle lives out there now. This kind of shows that one does not need to be skilled or talented to get published in some of these publications. The person just has to sprout the correct ideals with enough swear words. Absolutely correct. And Lord Inquisitor Hector Rex, I'm genuinely tempted to make as many fake personas as possible and submit various pieces of work and see who will pay me. Good plan. And Jan Harvey says, there's someone who knows how to manipulate the system to an expert level, indeed. Do you want to do the mentions?
Sure. Is Josh back? No, I'm just back for a little bit. I'm covering for people, but I said I would do this. This shouldn't be a surprise, but I'm not back full time.
It's the worst walkout ever. You're like Nigel Farage. You've retired like multiple times, then come back immediately.
Remember, dropped into your safe seat.
Bo referred to it as being like Seinfeld, where I quit my job and then come back.
George, yeah. That's what I said. Zia Yusuf was like, yeah, it's like, I was letting off steam. No one takes you seriously. Exactly. Yeah. That's true. That's you, that is.
Yeah, I still don't have another one yet. I'm going to be on the dole soon as well.
He didn't put myself that too well, did you? But that's when you're young enough, you can do stupid stuff like that.
It's all right. I can do stuff to get me by. Get invited in here enough. You dossers are on holiday all the time, aren't they? So
I've not had a day on holiday. So
not
far.
You.
The unemployed guy's calling you a dosser.
Hey, I've put in 5 years almost in this company.
And Jan Havi says, good morning, lads. Nice to see you on Lotus Eaters again, Josh. Interested to see your next YouTube videos.
Well, as you're all such lovely people, I'll give you a spoiler. My next video is going to be a video about camping and how it changed my philosophy on life. It's going to actually be quite deep, and I'm spending a lot of time on it. That's why it's taken so long. Nick was raking me over the coals saying,
yeah, because I promoted your YouTube on a channel. Don't have to name it. It's called Nick Dixon, and
subscribe to it.
120,000 views, whatever. And even on my little channel, which is a testament to you. But then you didn't do any videos. That's all I was.
There are three videos on there. There's
any more though? But you're doing it now.
I've got two on the way. Yeah.
You're like a perfectionist. You're getting it perfect.
I am. Yeah. It's one of those videos I've been wanting to make for years, and so I really want to do it well.
Do you go full Ray Mears and start trying to survive in the wild?
No, I bring food with me and I have a tent and things. And also, you're not allowed to go full Ray Mears without landowner permission. Like, it's very ecologically damaging to do that sort of stuff, like hunting and gathering and the likes.
It would be very funny, though, if you just, like, knock on the landlord's door, you know, guy who owns the land, you're like, excuse me, do you mind if I go Ray Mears, full Ray Mears on your
To be rock? Fair, when I've been camping on Dartmoor, the landowner's just sort of walked up to me and it's like, oh, are you having a camp? And it's like, oh, yeah, lovely day, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, it is. And he's like, oh, this is actually all my land. And it's like, oh, is it all right for us to be here? It's like, yeah, of course. As long as you pick up your rubbish. And it's all nice. We shook hands and wished each other a nice day.
Good English.
Yeah, exactly.
Strong bonds.
Just some lads out having a good time. I think he remembered back to his childhood.
Well, that's all we've got time for on the podcast today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Both again.
All right.
And that's your fill of firm Dixon Johnson for today. But if you would like another one before the weekend, you can come and join us on Lads Hour in half an
you
hour.
Little sluts. What?
We'll also be joined by Dan and Harry discussing the bro code and the unspoken etiquette of being bros and lads and friends. So, if not, have a good weekend. See you next time.
Bye-bye.